Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. And I have with me two wonderful people. Hi, first of all, Mike Long, my co-host. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Joyce. I hope you're doing well today.
Thank you very much. I am. And we also have with us Jean S. from Oregon. Hi, Jean.
Hi there.
Great. So we're going to talk today about Bertog-Dubé syndrome. And though you may never have heard of BHD, or you may, but you don't need to listen to the particulars of the disease so much as we want you to listen to the strategies that Jean has used to achieve a diagnosis and the value of hearing from other people with your same condition. So take it as a case study, if you will, if you're dealing with a different kind of disease, or if you are dealing with PhD, by all means, join the conversation. And we're glad for you to dial in if you want and ask questions. And I'll open up a little chat line here, too, so that if you want, you can post a question on the Internet, and we'll see it there. So, Jean, tell us a little bit about what is Bertog-Dubé syndrome anyway?
It's a genetic syndrome which has three manifestations, fibrofolliculomas, which are skin bumps, pneumothoraces, which is collapsed lungs, and kidney cancer.
Right, and people may think, what do these things have in common? So there's a lung thing, and there's a kidney thing, and there's a skin bump. Interesting combination.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's all due to a mutation on the gene which controls the folliculum.
Uh-huh.
So to me, follicles, you know, that sort of makes sense.
Right. So in the skin, it affects the follicles, and it's all due to a flaw in one little gene, just a bitty little misspelling in one gene, and because of that, some chemical process in the cell doesn't work quite right and facilitates the development of one or more of these issues. So, but in a family, people don't necessarily connect them. You wouldn't necessarily think that they all have one common source. You might think, you know, we're a catastrophe waiting to happen. All these things are happening in our family. How did you connect the dots, or what doctor helped you connect the dots?
Well, a doctor didn't help me. I was actually hindered by doctors. But when I had several pneumothoraces, and, you know, and I knew I had tumors on my kidneys, but was told they were benign, which wasn't the case, as it turned out. But it was when my son had a giant pneumothorax when he was diving that my husband started looking on the Internet.
Uh-huh.
And he just happened to stumble across the syndrome that combined kidney tumors and collapsed lungs. Gene, I think you ought to take a look at this.
Interesting. So it's a syndrome, and people have heard me talk about VHL syndrome too, but every once in a while there's one of these genetic syndromes that has multiple things that happen in your body that don't seem to be related, but in fact they are related through the chemical process in the cell.
Right.
Right.
Yes,
so,
Oh,
sorry.
Well, I had always thought it was really odd that I had, you know, collapsed lungs, had that problem, and then also had kidney tumors, and then mm-hmm. I, you know, it just all came together.
Right. So, you had already had a collapsed lung yourself in addition to the kidney cancer, and the doctors hadn't put this together either.
Oh, no, not at all.
So, And that happens more times than we'd like to think it would.
Well, I can understand in, you know, in a case where there's a very rare kind of syndrome, you know, that that would happen. I don't expect mm-hmm. doctors to, you know all about these rare syndromes, but I would expect them to be open-minded.
Right, you know, and just to share with everybody, there's more than 7,000 identified rare diseases. There's probably more that don't yet have names. And so no human being can store all that in their brain. So we don't expect doctors to immediately say, oh, it's Bird-Hog-Dubé syndrome, I know all about that. As a matter of fact, if they do say that, they're likely faking it. But you're kind of lucky if they remember one paragraph from medical school. So we are in an age where we really do need things like the internet resources that exist for doctors to help them put together, what do kidney cancer and collapsed lungs have in common?
Right. I think you really have to be your own advocate.
Right. And you said your husband found it by browsing on the internet.
Yes, he did.
Now,
I pursued it.
Good. How did you pursue it? Tell us about that.
Oh, I read studies on the internet and thought, I probably should have a DNA test and see about this. And a DNA test was very expensive and not covered by insurance. So I looked for a study, and I found that the National Cancer Institute said it at the National Institutes of Health had a study. So I emailed to them and described my son and I, and they said, yep, come out and join us, and we'll take a look.
Good for you. That's great. Now, did you ever go back to either of these doctors, the lung doctor or the kidney cancer doctor, and say, you know, I was looking on the internet, and I seemed to find something. What if anything, did you say to them?
Oh, yes, I did. I went to the kidney doctor, and he just said, no, I don't know about this, so it cannot be. And after I was definitely diagnosed, I returned with information for him because I felt he needed to know that there can be many different types of tumors on one kidney. You know, and this was his job. He was, you know, a kidney doctor. But when I got to his office, my appointment was mysteriously canceled.
Oh, glory.
So,
you know, when you were saying, you know, he said, I don't know about that. And that's actually good. I like it when a doctor is willing to say, I don't know about that. And he gets points with me for that. But the second half of what you said was not so great. He said, and therefore it cannot be. And it's like,
That's correct. Excuse me, sir,
you really do not know about everything in the universe.
Right. That's it.
So, Mike, have you worked with people who've run into these kinds of stumbling blocks, too?
Well, yes, and, you know, surprisingly enough, it's not always an extremely rare situation such as Gene is talking about, but sometimes you'll run into a doctor who will just miss a diagnosis, miss some key parts, and the patient keeps on going back and saying, but you're not taking care of it. And he said, oh, this is all it is. And later on, they'll find somebody else that will pick up on some of the things that the first doctor is missing for some reason. So Gene is right. A lot of times, if we're not getting satisfactory results, we need to be a self-advocate and, you know, and try to get the information together. And the National Institute of Health and a lot of the websites, you know, from the government out there has some of this stuff that you can possibly put together. And now, how long of a process was it, Gene, from the time you first started having these symptoms until somebody finally says, this is what it is?
Oh, goodness. Probably close to 30 years.
Wow.
About 30 years.
And you were originally told that your kidney tumors were nothing to worry about.
Right. A biopsy was taken of one tumor, and I was told it was benign, and so I had nothing to worry about. Although I had, you know, I had many, many, many tumors.
Right. So, by the way, and biopsies are being hotly debated at the moment. There are schools of thought that say that biopsies are not all that useful because you stick a pin into the tumor and you draw off some cells, and a tumor is generally not all one cell type. It may have some fatty tissue in it too, and so sometimes they draw it off and it's just fatty tissue, and they say, oh, that's nothing at all. And in fact, right next door to those cells were some of the nasty kind, and that they just didn't happen to pick up. So biopsies are not totally reliable, and there are pros and cons about them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And 30 years ago, of course, the technology was not as good as it is today, too, so there's that. But whenever you have multiple tumors or if they're both on both sides of your body, and particularly if this happens before you're 50 years old, these are clues that there's something genetic at work. And so having a discussion with a genetic counselor, getting some DNA testing is very important, because until you know what enemy you're dealing with, you don't know how to protect yourself. And that's what we all need to know, is what is going on here and how can I protect myself?
All right. Well, of course, Berthog Dubé wasn't even, you know, isolated until fairly recently. And, you know, I had like 30 years between the discovery of my kidney tumors and my collapsed lungs. And when I had my collapsed lungs, no one had any clue about Berthog Dubé.
Right. So this is another thing that happens in families where there's some genetic syndrome at work, is that sometimes the events that we need to put together to connect the dots happen 20 years apart or happen in different family members, like grandma had a brain tumor and this one had a collapsed lung and whatever, and you don't know whether or not there's a connection. But that's one of the reasons that a thorough family history is a very, very important tool for you and also for the medical folks in your life.
Right.
Well, just recently at a support group meeting, I was talking to a lady, and she knew someone in the community that had been diagnosed with kidney cancer, and her daughter was sitting there, and her daughter, you know, lives in Michigan and in Florida and in North Carolina also. She moves back and forth, and she made the comment, and you know your grandmother died of kidney cancer back in 1940. And she said, no, I didn't know that. So, you know, it's a lot of times those things are present, but you're right. We just do not know those things. We don't pass it on from generation to generation the way we used to.
Right, families get divided by geography. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jean.
Oh, I said just that's absolutely true. My family, I know that a lot of people on my mother's side of the family had cancer. But, mm-hmm. you know, we don't know, you know, and they died from cancer, but we don't know what kind of cancer. And,
right.
you know, and so it's just sort of up in the air.
Mm-hmm. You alluded to another interesting thing about BHD, and that is that the kidney tumors in Berthog Dubé syndrome can have different cell types. It's very interesting because 85% mm-hmm. of the kidney cancer in the general population is what's called clear cell renal cell carcinoma. And But there are some different cell types. There's papillary, there's chromophobe. So, and what's interesting about BHD is that one tumor could be clear cell and another one could be chromophobe or oncocytosis or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And what's more, they can be hybrids. Some of mine were chromophobe oncocytoma hybrids.
Hmm. And then the treatment could potentially be different depending on the cell type.
Yes, I'm sure. Unfortunately, I have not had any clear cell, but I believe, although I don't know, I just think that that's more a more aggressive tumor, and so it might be treated differently.
Yes, they have different characteristics, and the other thing about kidney cancer tumors, almost any cancer, is that as it grows, it tends to pick up a little speed here. So the bigger it gets, the faster it's likely to grow. And so all of those things are things that need to be watched out for. But, you know, 30 years ago, they didn't know all that we know today, but today we definitely know that if you have tumors on both sides or if you have multiple tumors even on one side, and especially if you're under 50, you should suspect that there might be something genetic going on and just have a conversation with a genetic counselor and see if there's something that you need to check out more thoroughly. And also to have that discussion with your doctor about kidney cancer or whatever the tumor type might be that you're dealing with and say, you know, I heard that if you're young and under 50 is young in this business, that that maybe we ought to think about something genetic and what should I do for that and see what your doctor says about it. Many of the doctors, especially the younger ones, have been schooled to think about genetic things and hopefully will refer you for genetic counseling. But many doctors won't. And, you know, doctors are human beings. So some of them are reluctant to admit that they could possibly not be right about something, you know. So you have to tread very carefully on their sensibilities, too.
Well, and then also there may be family members who do not want to know, you know, who refuse to be tested, because they really don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier.
What's been your experience with that?
Bury your head in the sand. Yeah, that is my experience. And I've been told this is, you know, it's fairly common.
Oh, yeah.
You know, by a genetic counselor, then, and there's just nothing you can do about it. If they don't want to know, then just let them be.
Right.
But I think it's bad because there are treatments. I mean, there are,
yeah.
You know, this does not have to be a death sentence at all.
Right.
And I don't, you know, and I certainly don't look at it that way. But if you don't know and you do nothing, it can be, yes.
Well, I mean, your son's experience is a good example of that. He didn't realize that he had any risk factors to worry about. He was young and energetic and wanted to go scuba diving in Mexico, and so he went, and in the water in Mexico, he had a collapsed lung.
Right. And
so tell us the rest of that story.
That also led to the bends.
Ooh.
Nitrogen bubble got into his spine because the lung was collapsed.
Mm. So if he had known he was at risk, first of all, he might not have gone scuba diving in Mexico. But
No.
but also, is there something you can, like, carry with you or maybe have a medic alert bracelet that would alert emergency personnel to what's going on?
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. But he sold his diving equipment right when he was in the hospital.
Well, fortunately, fortunately, he had his dad and his friends with him, and they pulled him out and got him the right help, right? But it was pretty scary there for a while.
Very, yes.
So, but again, you know, if you understand your risks, then you have the opportunity to use that information to help manage your health. And if you don't understand your risks, you can get blindsided by it.
That's right. I think to be educated is a good thing, much better.
Right. This is something that comes up in VHL families all the time, and some people say to me, oh, I just have to get my brother-in-law to get tested. I mean, I'm worried about him. I'm worried about his children, you know, and the problem is that the more you push when somebody's in that mode, the less likely it is to happen. And so what I've learned over the years is just give them the information and walk away from it, and don't make your whole relationship with that person about getting tested for this disease, because they'll just write you off. They just won't put themselves in your path anymore. But at least if you've let them know where the help is, one of these days he might decide he wants it, and then he'll know who to ask.
Right. Good plan.
Mike, did you want to add something to that?
Well, the genetic testing issue is a real hot topic right now, and you know it's not only with cancer and with rare diseases, but there's so many tests out there now that can tell people that they're predisposed to have early onset diabetes and Alzheimer's and all of these things, and so many people are starting to say, well, I don't want to know that right now because I'm 30 and I don't want to know that it's 60, it's going to start happening. And so they're choosing just to ignore that. And I can appreciate that in one sense. You know, had I known at the age of 20 that at 49 I would be diagnosed with kidney cancer, that might have troubled me from one standpoint, but at the other standpoint, if I had changed my diet and changed some of the everyday things that I had done, I might have been able to avoid every bit of this.
Right. Right, and we don't know that for sure, of course, but it certainly gives you one more tool in your arsenal if you understand what those risks might be, and particularly if it's something that's traveling in the family. Are you at risk or not? Some people go on thinking that they're at risk when, in fact, they're not at risk, and they could have just saved themselves all that worry.
That is so true.
And also,
go ahead.
If it's genetic, I think that a person needs to think about their offspring, and you know, maybe I don't want to know, but I need to know for the sake of my children, so that I can take the best care of them, you know, that is possible.
Right.
And maybe they can avert all of this, you know, problem.
Right, we're getting into an era where there will soon be some preventives that we can bring to bear. We don't
right.
quite have those yet for kidney cancer, but they're definitely working on it, and that would be pretty amazing. You know, if we could take one pill a day for the rest of our lives and never get another tumor, that would be pretty cool.
Yes, it certainly would.
Jean, tell us a little about the skin bumps part, because I understand that sometimes in Berthog Debay they're very subtle. They don't seem like much of anything. And other times they're much more overt. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, they're mainly on the face, neck, and upper chest. And like you say, sometimes in some people they're quite noticeable bumps on the face, just like a rash but all bumpy. On the cheeks and nose and forehead. Mine are flat and, like you say, hardly noticeable. So they're completely benign.
Right,
you know,
but they're a clue, right?
They're a clue. That's right. And so Duane are hardly noticeable. Nobody, you know, ever picked up on it.
Now, let me ask you this, Jean. If you went to a dermatologist with those bumps, would they normally pick up on the fact that, hey, this is something we need to really get involved with? Or would they just kind of...
I don't think so, because other people can also have follicular fibromas.
Right.
I don't think so. And I was extremely surprised to, I live in kind of a rural area, moved here about 3 years ago, and I went to a dermatologist here who actually, he's the only doctor I have ever met, this a young man who knows about DHD. He says, oh, yes, we studied that in school.
Hmm.
Good. Yeah, sometimes the younger doctors will pick up on the rare diseases a little more readily because of that, because they're a little closer to their schooling.
Right.
It's not just about what they've encountered in the clinic.
And it's like you said, you know, it wasn't really identified as a condition until like 1997. So it's, 1977. So it's a fairly young situation that they're dealing with.
Right.
I do know that the NIH has been doing a lot of education amongst dermatologists to help them identify BHD and also HLRCC, which has leiomyomas, which are also a skin condition. So are the BHD ones ever painful?
No.
No. Okay.
No, they're just little bumps. They're benign, not painful, just, you know, cosmetically can be, you know, not gorgeous, I guess, but you know, no problem at all.
Right. So useful primarily as just a clue.
Right.
Right. So if anybody out there who's listening to this has in their family, even amongst multiple people in the family, kidney cancer, collapsed lung, and these skin bumps, it's worthwhile pursuing this a little bit and seeing if maybe BHD is the connecting factor here.
Right.
Great.
Jean,
so
this
is
Mike. I'm glad that we had this chance to have a conversation with you, and I'm going to turn it back over to Joyce, but we're getting close to the end of the program, and we'll make sure we get some links on our website, on our blogs and everything.
Okay, sounds good. I enjoyed talking with you, Mike.
So Jean is a volunteer with the VHL Family Alliance, which supports people with several of the hereditary kidney cancers, and Jean can be reached by bhd@vhl.org. That's like veryhappylife.org. And her telephone number is 800-767-4845. Extension 725. So, Gina, if there is somebody who is newly diagnosed with BHD, what would you recommend that they do?
Oh, gosh. talk to a genetic counselor, first thing.
Yeah.
And then also talk to other people. If they have any connection with other BHD, you know, patients, talk to them and find out what it's like.
Right.
And you know, I think that being isolated, thinking you're just all alone, would be a very scary thing. But if you know that there are others, then it's not quite so scary.
Great. Thank you so much, Jean, for being with us. And you can talk with Jean also at vhl.inspire.com. There's a thread there for people with Bird Hog DeBay syndrome that's sponsored by the VHL Family Alliance. And we hope that you will connect with Jean and with other folks with BHD and help us all learn more about BHD and how to manage one's health with this condition. So thanks again, Jean. This has been great. And thanks for all
the work
that you do as a volunteer. We really appreciate that. And thanks, everybody, for listening with us and learning more about genetic syndromes. And we hope that you'll be with us again next week. Mike has an interesting program for you then. And meanwhile, we hope that you will be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks so much. Bye.